This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst ever!
Bundy at the 10. What's he up the right sideline?
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, here in a slightly chillier studio with producer Mal Powell. Mallory, how are you?
I'm good. I'm all bundled up right now. You can't see me, but I've got a sweatshirt and a blanket on right now.
Got your Michigan State sweatshirt on, like you are in East Lansing right now.
Yeah, literally. Very on brand for me.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little hot out, so we're going to have to keep this room a little cooler with all the equipment. So
yeah.
And back on the other line, how we typically do during the season, Mike Craven. Mike, how are you, buddy?
Doing pretty good, trying to avoid some heat out here in hot Bertram, Texas.
Oh, yeah. Man, it every year May comes around, I'm like, am I ready?
I know.
Am I ready for the next 4 or 5 months? Like,
I looked at the weather today because I need to get my car washed.
Yeah.
And was just quickly defeated by the 97s, the 98s this whole week. And I'm like, dude, it's only May. Like, can we at least have a little bit of spring?
But
Texas says no.
I was about to say, we have winter and then summer.
Yep, exactly.
We don't have fall, we don't have spring.
Yep.
The only
yep.
reason we know it's spring is that it rains a little more.
Yeah.
Temperature wise, there is no spring. So
tornadoes and lightning.
Right, exactly. All the worst things that come with spring.
Exactly.
All right. So we have kind of a slimmed down show today. We have another interview series, first of all, I should mention. This one with SFA head coach Colby Carthel, one of our favorite personalities in the state. I didn't talk to him, but I know Tepper and Max at the time when he was working here. They talked to him after he won the D2 national title with Texas A&M Commerce and Luis Perez at quarterback. And at that point, I think that was 2017, he quickly became one of the biggest, best personalities, in my opinion, in the state. And so when he got the SFA job, of course, during their kind of freelance COVID year 2020, there was that photo of him with his shirt off after they, I forget who they beat, but they beat somebody. And it was just like, oh, okay, I get it. This guy's great. And so Mike, I'm glad you got a chance to sit down and talk with him one-on-one, because he's somebody who I think everybody in the state should be getting to know more of.
Yeah, he was tremendous. If you want to hear a coach completely annihilate me and my profession, stick around and listen to Colby Carthel.
He did say he wanted to talk to me over you, so.
It was good. It was a fun time. He was great. It was great doing his interview for the magazine and then getting him on to kind of talk about some non-football stuff, just get to know him a little bit better. It was a fun time. I think it was a good interview.
One of the things, and we can talk about this later after the interview, but one of the things that strikes me about his personality is he strikes me as somebody, have we talked about Keeler as like a lifer? And obviously they're moving up to FBS, so like, you know, it's different as Sam Houston was. But I do think he's, I don't want to say an FCS lifer, but I do think he's the type of personality that I don't see, and this isn't because I don't think he could do it. I think he's good enough to where he'll build it. He could potentially build up to this. I don't see him as being like a big time Power 5 head coach. I see him as like Kansas State. Right, like I see him more like an insular community where he can really be himself. Because, like, I mean, let's be honest, the way he acts could turn some people off, right? Some people don't want a coach that is that type of personality, is that type of passion, has that type of passion. But, like, I feel like in the locker room and in a community, a tight-knit community, like a Nacogdoches, like a Commerce, Texas, I think UTEP would have been a great job for him too, or it could be a great job for him down the line if that happens or whatever. Like, I think those type of communities are the ones that he fits best. Because I feel like whether it's media cycles or whatever, you mentioned, you know, your profession, our profession here. I don't think that meshes well with what his personality and coaching style is.
Well, he even mentioned in the interview too, that he's all about having fun. You know, his number one priority is to make sure the kids are having fun, and sure, that's something that he instilled at his staff at A&M Commerce, and that's definitely something that he is trying to instill at SFA too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said he was a small town guy. You know, he grew up in a small town. He went to Angelo State. You know, his dad was a D2 head football coach for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, helps him. You know, he's an assistant, you know, kind of volunteer assistant at SFA to be around the grandkids and stuff. So, you know, he even said in the interview that he tried to turn down the SFA job in his words hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. You know, like he wanted every reason to stay at Commerce, still has a piece of property back in Commerce, and was planning to build a house and just kind of live out there and, you know, ride into the sunset, win some national championships, go into College Football Hall of Fame. So, you know, I don't know if he's somebody we'll ever see coaching like Austin, LA or anything like that. But again, like you said, not because of his coaching acumen. I think he, you know, would be a great coach wherever he decided to be. I think personality fit wise, he does fit in kind of the smaller towns. He likes to hunt. He likes to fish. You know, mm-hmm. I get the feeling he likes to be left alone sometimes. He mentioned, you know, the other day he went to the ranch, worked for 11 hours, just kind of put his head down and worked and got away from everything. I think he enjoys that. You get up into those, you know, P5 major jobs. You can't do that kind of stuff anymore. Yeah. You just don't have that kind of time. I think work-life balance is an important thing, and he seems like a guy who has plenty of that right now.
Yep. So we'll get into that about in 20 minutes or so, I'd say 15, 20 minutes. We got a couple headlines and a couple discussion points, mostly. No real huge news. I guess the biggest news was the Baylor quarterback situation. They go with Blake Shapen, obviously, after the spring game and before the May deadline. Were we off? We were off when that news dropped, right?
That was the week we took off.
Okay, so
for me to write the
right, exactly. So, you know, last time we talked, we kind of, that was one of the discussion points for Baylor. Obviously, this offseason was, is Bahanian or Blake Shapen the guy? I think we all came to the same conclusion that we wouldn't have been shocked if Bahanian was the guy, but that the team's ceiling probably was higher with Shapen. Well, it looks like Dave Aranda felt the same way, that the team's higher ceiling was with Shapen. So he was named the starter before the May 1st deadline, of course, and that allowed Gary Bahanian to transfer and gain immediate eligibility. He popped up at USF, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. I figured he would be in play for somewhere maybe around the area, maybe around his home state of Arkansas, maybe Arkansas, I don't know. But also I know Arkansas is pretty dedicated to Malik Hornsby over there. He seems to be the guy there, so maybe it wasn't really an option for him. But yeah, interesting move for him. USF has kind of been a down program recently. They have, Jeff Scott, their head coach, I think, from Clemson, former OC under Dabo Swinney. So he's been kind of tasked with turning that program around. And when you look at his track record with quarterbacks, obviously Trevor Lawrence, I believe Deshaun Watson was under him as well. Taj Boyd, I'm pretty sure too. Or at least, I don't know if he was a coordinator with Taj Boyd, but you know, I think he was on the staff. I think this is a good fit because one, he'll obviously get to play right away. Mm-hmm. I think I like Jeff Scott's track record with quarterbacks, and you know, it's going to be a tough situation, obviously, because USF's not very good right now. But I have to give credit to also here to Dave Aranda, who didn't mess around, right? He basically said, like, hey, this is the move we're making. Blake Shapen's the guy here. Gary, you are free to do what you want. And, you know, Gary Bahanian, I think it's harsh. Obviously, you lead Baylor to a Big 12 championship and you're not the starter the next year. You know, but I think we all understand that I think that offense had probably reached its ceiling with him at quarterback.
I think a point that you just made is super important, and it's one that I wanted to amplify a little bit, and it's that good on Dave Aranda and the Baylor coaching staff for not dragging this thing on if they had an answer. Because mm-hmm. I think we could point to a few coaching staffs around the state who probably know who their starting quarterback is going to be, but won't say it because they don't want the other guy to transfer and to, like, you know, leave a hole kind of at the backup spot. And, you know, Baylor didn't do that. Some of that's, you know, they got Kyron Jones as a redshirt freshman backup out of Shadow Creek that they really like, who they think is going to be good, you know. But Dave could have easily been like, yeah, it's still a competition. We're going to have it open in August. Mm-hmm. You know, Gary's won a lot of games here. We're going to see, you know, what we can do there, even if, you know, in his mind's eye, he knew that Shapen was going to be the dude. So good on Baylor for doing that. I think the transfer portal has a lot more guys like Gary Bohannon than not, you know, mm-hmm. guys who are using it in the correct way. Like, what is wrong with knowing that he won a lot of football games at Baylor, did everything he was supposed to do, was a great leader, was a great teammate by all accounts, but he got beat out by somebody who was you know, better, at least better for that system, better for the year of 2022. And now he gets to go and kind of, you know, fulfill a dream and keep playing college football for as long as possible. I think when we talk about the transfer portal and NIL and you know, current, you know, modern college football in the landscape, we talk way too much about the guys who are leaving schools to go get $5 million.
Yeah.
Most of the guys are leaving schools just to go play football for another year or two, because after it's over, they got to go be us and just be adults, and that sucks. Mm-hmm. And so good on Baylor. I'm glad that Bohannon found a spot that he likes. I do think Scott's offense will be really good for him. He's known as a guy who uses kind of bigger quarterbacks in the run game and puts them positions to be successful in the pass game. So I think an all-in-all good story, and just another just one of the things that I liked about it was how you mentioned that, you know, Baylor didn't kind of let this thing kind of linger for too long and put a kid in a weird spot where, you know, he just kind of sits there in August if he doesn't want to be there. I wish more and more, you know, coaching staffs would kind of do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, as we move forward.
Yeah, there is, like, I think when, like you mentioned it, when, especially in this era, like there is a sense of, like, you know, it's just kind of free agency, or I guess more of a soccer an analogy would be better, where it's like, oh, they're offering this much for you, so, like, you know, I'm going to try to make a move over there. And so that's what gets the headlines, obviously. But, like, the one thing that even – and this has kind of been my sticking point with the narrative around the transfer portal since it kind of arose, is the fact that in both good and bad ways, like, coaches have been ruthless with players, right? Like, whether or not – I think this was a good form of ruthlessness, right, where they just straight up told, hey, you're not going to start. But the positive was that he was able to transfer. That's part of being a coach, is be having that ruthlessness. What I do think is lost, I think this was such a high profile situation to where, like, oh, Baylor's starting quarterback is out. Okay, so it became publicly known that, like, he was leaving because he wasn't going to be the starter. What I think doesn't get a lot of coverage is coaches who do the same thing, but maybe to players who aren't as high profile, right? You see an offensive lineman transfer. You see a guy who maybe started 3 years in transfer, and people are like, man, that's weird. Or, wow, he must hate that coach. And it's like, well, not necessarily. I think a lot of these guys get the indication that they're not going to be a starter, right? And they end up leaving. And sometimes it's amicable. You don't always see, like, I don't know. I think the vast majority of transfers in this regard, not including NIL or anything, but in this regard are mutual departures, right? Where it's like, hey, you're probably not going to start. Okay, I want to, you know, and so coaches are saying you can go, you can leave, and you can go anywhere. And players are like, okay, cool. But I feel like there's such a stigma around if a guy transfers, he hates it. Him, mm-hmm. Him and the coaches are on bad terms or whatever. Obviously, there's probably some bitterness on the player's part, but, like, I don't know. I felt there was a stigma, especially now that since the transfer portal kind of ballooned after COVID, that everybody was just like these awful relationships and, oh my gosh, you know, he probably can't stand the locker room or whatever. And that's not really the case. I feel like most of them are like Gary Bohannon, where it's like, I just want to play, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm just here to, you know, I wasn't in the rotation. Fair enough. Hey, I did what I did. I got you guys a Big 12 title. Cool. I'm out. Right. And I feel like so many more situations like that are common than probably what they get covered as, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the transfer portal, about 40% of the guys in there are former walk-ons, and I would say 30 to 40% more of them in there are guys who were told by the coaching staff that there may not be room for them. I mean, sure. These are still one-year contracts, you know, mm-hmm. and they're still, you know, as little as we like to talk about it, there are those conversations behind the scenes of how do we get this guy off our books,
mm-hmm.
you know? So for every Zach Evans that leaves TCU for Ole Miss, there's 10 other guys that, you know, that school's trying to get off, you know, their book so they can go get guys that fit them, their system more, or mm-hmm. they think they're, you know, are going to play better or whatever the case may be. And so, yeah, I mean, I think when we look at the transfer portal, there's probably only 15 to 20% of those guys in there that are actually in there by choice, who are leaving a place where they could play football.
Yeah.
Most of the time they're leaving to find a place where they can play actual football, not be on a practice team or a scout team or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys who get the headlines and get the talking points and get fan bases riled up are the dudes that, you know, win the Biletnikoff and then leave Pitt, right? Mm-hmm. That's a better talking point. But the vast majority of guys are not in that situation.
Yeah. Along that lines of the transfer portal, you had an article out yesterday, I believe the 10th, on new coaches and kind of the reality of transfer portals, or the reality that's created via the transfer portal for new coaches. Typically, when you've seen a guy like Joey McGuire, when you see a guy come in, and even Sark in his, even though this is his second year, like even guys like Sark, where you see, typically you always, in recruiting, you know this as a recruiting guy, right? You write off the first class, right? Like you just say like, and they're scrapping together what they can get, right? It's not, you know, it's kind of maybe three or four or five of their guys, but the vast majority of those classes are guys that they're just kind of hoping are good based off the intel from the other staff that left and the scouting intel, what they have already. Sure, whatever. Now, yes, when it comes to high school classes, sure, that's probably still somewhat the case. But as you mentioned, new coaches are averaging, and I recommend everybody go check this out because it is a good breakdown. New coaches are averaging this year, 13 and a half new players via the transfer portal as of May 9th. So, and you look at Texas, and again, this is not a new coach, but it's similar. I think this is similar. We look at what Joey McGuire is doing. We'll start off with him. And all of a sudden you look at that roster, you're like, man, there's a lot of interesting pieces there, right? Yeah. Baylor Cup, you got, oh, Brady Boyd, you know, you start to look, you're like, man, okay, I like that. Well, then you look at Texas coming off 5-7. All of a sudden Vegas has them, what, the third favorite to win the Big 12? Like, I don't know if I agree with that, but like, you look at the roster additions, you're like, I like that. You look at SMU, who is a new hire, Rhett Lashley. You know, people were worried about Sonny Dykes taking all the players, right? And everybody just following him to TCU. Well, that didn't necessarily happen. He held on to a couple, but he's also added some pretty damn heavy hitters, right? Kamar Wheaton, Bo Corrales was one that snuck under my radar. I didn't even realize that he went to SMU. And Kevonte Dixon's another one. And so they're kind of, the transfer portal's kind of, I don't want to say gotten rid of, and I want to, this is where I kind of want to get your thoughts, Mike. I don't want to say gotten rid of those year zero kind of things we always throw at with coaches. Typically, a new coach comes in, first year goes however, and it's like, yeah, sure, it's fine. It's year zero, right? Year one or year zero. They've more or less thrown that, again, not out the window, but definitely shrunk in that expectation, I should say. It's to where it's like, I don't know, man. If it's a decent enough program, you should probably be pulling out six wins no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my points would be, you know, first of all, you're not given 3-4 years to win anymore. Like, even at a place like Tech, like Matt Wells got ran up out of there, right, with a winning record. You know, so, like, not overall, but, like, in 2021, he had a winning record when he got fired. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, we can go down the list of guys who we act like, yeah, well, you know, by the time they have the third recruiting class on campus, they should be winning. Well, we don't give them that time anymore. So the transfer portal allows those new coaches to come in and go, look, you know, I'm not going to get patience here. I need to make this roster better right now. Where can I go and figure that out? And over the spring, you know, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, you know, spring has become almost an evaluation period more than a developmental period where, you know, Joey McGuire walks into Texas Tech and goes, look, we don't have offensive line bodies. And they go and they sign five different dudes on the offensive line. Sonny Dykes shows up to TCU. They're going to change to an odd man front. He goes, we don't have the right body types to run this defense here at TCU. They've had three, you know, 300-pound defensive linemen through the transfer portal. So you don't have to wait anymore. That transition class isn't a wash. Instead of like throwing out flyers and trying to fill up gaps because you need scholarship players on your roster come fall, you can do that in the transfer portal. I don't think Joey McGuire's plan at Texas Tech is to sign 13 to 15 transfers a cycle, but it is a good way to kind of supplement this first, you know, recruiting class that, you know, you can get onto the field and really get it figured out early on because, you know, those boosters are going to want results right away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Texas was able to upgrade their roster. Texas Tech was able to upgrade their roster. And if you go down the list, for as much hand-wringing as we get about the transfer portal, I don't know if I could find a team inside the state at the FBS level that is worse because of the transfers they left rather than better because of the transfers that they got in. I feel like almost every school, if not every single school on paper, mm-hmm. is more talented today with the guys they added in the transfer portal than they would be today had they only kept the guys who left in the transfer portal. So I think it's a net positive for these coaches for the most part. Sure, it's probably frustrating at times to kind of lose some guys and not really know what your roster is going to look like, you know, in terms of like being able to prepare and stuff. You know, Sonny Dykes made a comment in the article of like, you know, I don't think you know what your roster really looks like until August nowadays. Mm-hmm. And that's probably true. But I think it provides more of an advantage to the coaches who can go, look, we don't have a running back. We don't have a wide receiver. We don't have a right tackle, whatever the position may be. And you can go and instantly, you know, improve that, not with a 17 or 18 year old that may down the line improve that position, but with a 20, 21, 22 year old that can come in right away and be your left tackle. You know, SMU, for example, you know, their starting left tackle is going to be a transfer. Their starting left guard is going to be a transfer. I'd be surprised if the starting running back wasn't Kamar Wheaton. That's a transfer, right? I mean, they're going to have two or three wide receivers playing a lot of snaps that are transfers. That's not just on the offensive side of the ball. They're probably going to have half their starters be transfers.
Yeah.
In previous climates, Rhett Lashley probably would have gone, you know, 3-9 in his first season. And we'd have to have like a wait and see approach. Now the expectations are, look at that roster, man. SMU should win 7, 8, 9 games. Let's see what Rhett Lashley has. And so some of that could be a double-edged sword, but the expectations in college football, because of the money being spent on these coaches, aren't to be patient anymore. They're to win right away. And if you're a head coach, the best way to do that is to attract the transfer portal that first year you get on campus and really reset that roster in an image that you like it to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the reason why I brought up Steve Sarkisian in Texas is because of that, where, you know, last year obviously was last year, but like, I know some reactive fans were like, "Ooh, you know, he's not the guy, got to move on," or whatever. But I also know, one, I knew that that wasn't going to happen, obviously. But the other thing I knew was that they have to come out a lot better next year. Like, it's not just like a, yes, they weren't going to fire him after 1 year, but that does probably push his timeline up a bit, right? If they come out, you know, in the next couple of years and don't probably hit the 10-win mark, probably by 23 or something, that probably does push where it's like, ooh, that start was pretty bad. So, you know, where's this kind of going? So what did he do? He just went out and got Quinn Ewers, right? Like, he was like, we need a quarterback. Cool. Fixed. Oh, we need depth at wide receiver. Fixed. Right. Like, instant fix. And they didn't get the trench help that they needed, which again goes back to like the whole, like, ooh, is he going to have enough time to build some of these linemen that he's getting out of high school? That they desperately needed, but again, are still freshmen coming out. And again, I look at somebody like a Joey McGuire, who is known for his high school accolades, obviously, and connections. And sure, they're obviously like, I think they're still one of the top five classes in 23 right now because he's hit the ground running. But he's also like, look at the transfers they're bringing in. It's guys that you would hope that a guy with Texas high school connections would be able to bring, right? Brady Boyd, Baylor Cup, Tyler Owens, right? Like, these guys are like, oh, okay, these are Texas players that he knows about, that he has connections with their coaches because he was probably recruiting them at Baylor. And he's bringing them, you know, some of them are out of state. I know Tyler Owens was at Texas, but some of them were out of state, bringing them back home, be like, hey, why don't you just come back here? And so you're getting kind of the benefit of hiring a Joey McGuire without having to necessarily wait for those recruits to come in from high school, from the 23 class, 22 class, or whatever, and develop in 2-3 years. You can see Brady Boyd right away this year, right? Probably be one of their key rotation guys at wide receiver. You can see Tyler Owens come in and play. You can see Baylor Cup make a difference right away. And so I think the transfer portal in some ways is expediting a lot of the development when it comes to these coaches, because they're obviously bringing in guys that fit their scheme, like you mentioned with TCU, where it's like, well, we need guys that fit. And so it's like, okay, well, just go get a body that's played some downs in college and that can fit. So yeah, I agree. I think it is a net positive overall. I think it's just other things like NIL that kind of make things a little bit more interesting right now. But overall, I do think it is I agree with you that it's been a net positive in my opinion when it comes to my college football experience.
And I get why college coaches don't like it, because it's more work.
Oh yeah, no, you still got to call that high school kid that you're trying to recruit, and you're also trying to call 10 other transfer portal kids that you're trying to recruit.
And you got to build a culture within your locker room that makes people not want to leave it.
Yeah. I will say, right? that's the one thing.
That be able to sign, you used to be able to sign kids, and then, like, you had them.
Right.
Right?
Yes, like, 100%.
If they wanted to leave, they had to sit out a whole year. Who knows how that works? Like, a lot of colleges don't want to use a scholarship on a guy who has to sit out a year, so they were iffy to kind of take the transfer guy. Mm-hmm. So you basically just have to sit there and write it out.
Yeah.
Right? Well, now, if you want to be successful, not only do you need to recruit guys and get them on campus, but you need to build a workplace that makes people want to go, you know, hey, I want to work here. Yeah, I could get an extra $20,000 if I went somewhere else or whatever, but I like it here. I like the school. I like my friends. I like my teammates. I like the coach. I like what we're doing. I believe in what we're doing. You didn't see a lot of guys leave UTSA.
Sure, yeah.
Right? You didn't see Zachary, you know, Franklin, those kind of guys that I'm sure could have gone to big P5 schools and gotten some extra money and all that kind of stuff that doesn't exist in San Antonio. But that's a program that people like to play for right now. And so, you know, I do think that's a part of the equation, you know, that we're not talking about. Some of this is just being a good boss.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I don't know if college head coaches had to worry about that. Now they do. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. One thing, the last thing I want to hint on this is one coach that has done this probably better than anyone in the country. And I hate to admit it because he gets on my nerves is Dabo Swinney. Mm-hmm. Nobody's transferring from Clemson, right? And to his credit, he's not bringing in transfers either, right? Like the thing that Nick Saban kind of jokingly referred to is like, okay, I guess this is the way things are going, right? So he's just going to go get every good transfer he can get, right? And so he was basically like, yo, this is the rules? All right, cool, bet. Dabo Swinney, for all of his insufferability when it comes to players making money, and a lot of off the field stuff. I genuinely think he's insufferable when it comes to talking about things not off the field as far as college athletics goes. But he has established something there that keeps people in Clemson, right? There's no, and again, part of it is probably that, yeah, sure, Clemson has money. And so, like, obviously, but that doesn't stop people from transferring. Right? People leaving Texas, people leaving Alabama. Like, that doesn't stop people from transferring all the time. To an extent, Dabo Swinney, to his players at least, right? Probably not to the media or whatever, but to his players at least, I think Dabo Swinney's a good boss, right? He's somebody who they're not leaving to go play somewhere else, right? Especially after last year, where it was obviously not the year they wanted, and everybody stuck around, right? You haven't seen that mass exodus that you would expect from a program that fell off as hard as Clemson did last year. And so, yeah, I think to your point, that's a very good point, is that I like to see the programs that are keeping players there. And to Jeff Traylor's credit, too, it's not like he's going and adding UTSA is adding a bunch of transfers either, right? Like he might bring in a couple, but like because he's keeping everybody there, and it kind of goes to his coaching philosophy, too, how he's just promoting from within as opposed to go getting outside talent like they do with Will Stein and Joe Price promoting them from within. He's trying to prove to his guys there that there is a way to move up, right? That there is a loyalty there on his part saying, hey, I'm not going to go get a new quarterback because Frank Harris had a bad game and I want him to have competition, right? I'm just going to keep Frank Harris here. I'm not going to go get a hotshot offensive coordinator because Barry Lunny left. I'm just going to promote Will Stein. And so I think, yeah, I mean, it basically, like you said, it boils down to just being a good boss and running a program well. All right, well, that's all our headlines and kind of discussion points for this episode. We're going to get to our interview now with head coach Colby Carthel. Like we've said all along, these are low-key interviews, you know, nothing really too much on the field related. You know, they just got finished with, in this case, they just got finished with spring ball. So, like, you know, the last thing they probably want to do is rehash all of that again and ask about their quarterback situation and all that. So, it's a lot about Colby Carthel's career, Colby Carthel's life, and you'll hopefully get a sense of the kind of guy he is and why he's kind of been such a favorite around the DCTF office as far as personality goes. So without further ado, here is SFA head coach Colby Carthel.
All righty, here with SFA head coach Colby Carthel. Coach, thank you for taking the time. Before we get into it, last week we had Casey Keeler on, and I got a question from you to ask Coach Keeler, so I let him return the favor. So I want to, this is from him, this is not me, please do not beat me up. He wanted to know if this coaching thing didn't work out for you, if you already had a Food Network job lined up, hashtag be a big coach. Those are his words.
Well, I do. That's a pretty, you know, lucrative opportunity for me. But, you know, after the 2020 season, when I took my shirt off and was such a national sensation. I'm thinking Chippendales might be my next line of employment. So if that doesn't work out, then I'll jump back into the Food Network.
It's always good to have a backup plan. Absolutely right. Good to have a backup plan. You two have what I think is an incredible relationship, and one that I think college football could learn from if all rivalries kind of had that going back forward. I'm curious, were you ever a professional wrestling fan? Because it seems like you two kind of have that ability to kind of shoot promos at each other and understand what it's all about.
Oh, I think both of us just have a good, you know, we take our job serious, but we don't take ourselves too serious all the time. And you know, I think life's too short not to have fun with it. And if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, what can you laugh at? And so we do. I mean, we're bitter rivals, and he wants to win and I want to win, and we're going to do all we can to get that done, but we're going to do it in a manner with, you know, some class and have some fun with it. And I think everybody, you know, again, the world takes itself way too serious these days and makes everything personal and attacking. And I agree with you, Mike. I think we could all enjoy life a little more if we had a little more sense of humor in our own hearts.
You were a linebacker at Angelo State. I'm curious if head coach Colby Carthel would even recruit linebacker Colby Carthel, how that would go.
Definitely not. You know, I was way too slow and too terrible. Not at this place, I know. That's what I tell all my players. I'm like, man, you're a lot better player than I ever was. So, but no, I enjoyed the game. The game taught me a lot. I'm very fortunate to be able to coach and give back to this game, give back to players, and very thankful for the education I got at Angelo State and the experiences and the memories I had there with my teammates and coaches. Wouldn't trade it for the world, and hope we're able to, you know, foster an environment like that here at SFA. That's my goal. So some of these guys can have those same experiences, because in the end, you know, these rings that we wear, they you know, I put them on for an interview, but other than that, they collect dust, and it's the memories you make and the experiences you have that's what makes college sports so unique and so awesome.
Your dad, Don, also was a college football coach, a head coach that you worked for. Was there any doubt that you were going to get into coaching when your playing career was over? Was that kind of a birthright, or was it something you kind of came into later in life?
No, I think my parents did a great job letting me, you know, choose my own path, and even playing after high school. That was completely my decision. But, you know, when I went to college, I wanted to be a game warden, you know, and cause I like to hunt and fish. And then I realized, well, game warden doesn't, they don't ever get to hunt and fish. You know, they just police the people that hunt and fish. So I, about my sophomore year, decided, you know, that wasn't going to be the path, and taking a lot of biology classes. So then I was working towards pre-med and did everything, but, you know, graduated with a biology degree and then broke my mom, my grandma's heart, because I didn't go to med school. I just decided to go coach. And you know, this game gets in your blood, and just the, like I say, the camaraderie and the memories you make and the fun times you have, you know, competing and not just competing, you know, it's the days leading up to it, the workouts in the summer and the recruiting and the, you know, just building a team, building a program, you know, and being part of a program, being part of something bigger than yourself. That's what's so enjoyable about football.
You know, your dad, I mean, obviously they know how much of a grind it is. Was there any kind of talk from him of like, hey, this is what you're getting into, are you sure this is kind of what you want type of deal?
Yeah, I really enjoyed farming. You know, when my dad retired at age 39, you know, for us, just so he could, you know, be a little bit more part of our life, he moved the family farm. I love farming. I've always had a garden each year, and I like, you know, having dirt underneath my fingernails and, you know, hauling hay and building fence. And in fact, last week I took a day and I just went up to place and worked for about 11 hours, you know, worked like a rented mule and did just that, built fence and shredded, ran a tractor. And that's good for the soul, I think. But, you know, in terms of the grind and what it takes, you're going to work, you know, no matter what you do, unless, you know, you work, you know, in your profession, you get to sit on the couch and just talk to people all day. It's got to be the easiest job on the planet. But for most normal people, Mike, you got to work your tail off to be successful. And so that's why I chose football, because it's just an enjoyable day. Each day you come and yes, you put in tremendous hours and it's a sacrifice with family and time, but you enjoy doing it. So you, you look up, you've been doing it 23 years, you don't feel like you worked a day in your life.
It is a lot easier to talk about wins and losses than actually achieve wins and losses. I'll 100% give it to you there. One last question about your dad. You were the DC for him at West Texas A&M. What was that like? I mean, how, like, you know, being a son and an assistant coach, him being a dad and your boss, you know, how fun was that kind of relationship, getting that time together as, you know, maybe more peers than, you know, father, son, maybe when you're a kid?
Yeah, no, it was a tremendous blessing. And, you know, some time that, that we'll always cherish, and really and truly pretty much of my 23 years, I think about 21 of them we've coached together. He volunteered for us there at Abilene Christian when I was there working for Gary Gaines at ACU. And then I went there and worked with him. And then, you know, as soon as I got the job at Commerce, you know, that, that next year he started helping us, and he's still, he's in our press box every fall and down here for 2 days, and, you know, stays very involved with our staff. And so it's a tremendous blessing and unique in this profession to be able to have that, that bond and those special times together. And it gets my mom down here. We've got three little boys. And so, she allows him to keep coaching, 'cause she gets to come see the grandkids more often. And so, it's been great, you know, there at WT, it was fun. Specific to your question, you know, being the DC, you know, it's always your fault when you lose, whether you lose 10-9 or, you know, 50-49 defense, it's always defense's fault that you lost. But, we were very, very successful there, had some great defenses, had some tremendous teams. You know, during that 7-year run, I think we were the most successful team in the state of Texas that played scholarship college football. So no complaints there, and a lot of great people up there in the Texas Panhandle and West Texas in general.
You get your first head coaching job in 2013 at Texas A&M Commerce. How prepared were you for that job? Like, how prepared can you be for the first time you're a head coach? And maybe what was one of the more surprising things about being a head coach that maybe you just hadn't even accounted for, or even knew you were going to face?
You know, I guess the more surprising thing is, it's, you know, is the buck stops here. I mean, there's no one else you can take your troubles to. I mean, everything ends on the head coach's desk. Was I ready for it? No, you know, no one's ever ready for it. You know, just like you're never ready to coordinate, you're never ready to coach. You just get out there and you do it. You find a way to get it done and be successful. And you make mistakes, but you fall forward, you know, and you get up and you learn from them and you go from there. But it was a lot of fun, you know, turning that program around. Again, it was placed in bad shape. One of the worst programs in the country when we got there, and you know, got a bunch of guys, good young coaches, and we went out and hustled the recruiting trail, recruited a bunch of great players, and had a lot of fun while we were there. And well, we turned it around and won a bunch of rings. And, you know, 5 years later, you look up and you go from the worst in the country to national champion. That, you know, it's kind of a storybook. And I always tell people that, what's the secret to our success? You know, we don't have more fun because we win. You know, we win because we have more fun. And we've kind of tried to instill those same qualities and the things we did there at SF at A&M Commerce. We've tried to build this program on those same foundations, and I think the success has found us here as well, and kind of seeing history repeat itself.
You know, was it hard when the SFA job came along? I mean, you did take a program that had won like two games in the previous 2 years before you got there to a national championship. You know, was it just time to kind of move on to the next challenge, or was there kind of some apprehension of, you know, you kind of built this thing, you know, did you want to kind of stay and see it through a little bit? How did that work for you?
Oh, you know, God's got a sense of humor, and, you know, I always follow his plan, and his plan's perfect. But, you know, in September of 2018, my wife and I, we bought some land, some acreage there outside of Commerce. We were getting ready to build a big house on a property out off a dirt road, and our kids go to North Hopkins County School and, you know, stay there and win 10, 12, 14 ball games every year, go to the College Football Hall of Fame. And then 2 months later, you know, this job came calling, and just, you know, we tried to say no 100 times, but every time, you know, the good Lord opened doors and pointed us in this direction. And Ryan Ivey, our athletic director here, was the AD that hired me there at Commerce. And he had left and gone to Austin Peay and turned that program around and then came here. So, you know, this profession, a lot of it is, you know, like any professions, who you work with, who you work for, make sure you're working for good people. Dr. Westbrook, our president, you know, was an athletic minded guy. His wife's in our Hall of Fame. And so knew we had good leadership here, good administration. Obviously you're in East Texas. There's talent. Oh, you go out here and shake a pine tree and three or four kids fall out that run 4.4. So there's great football being played out here. Great programs and new recruiting would, you know, it'd be easy to recruit. And so, you know, again, we tried to stay because we love Commerce, still do. We've still got that place. We go up there all the time. Lifelong friends there within that athletic department, within that community, a fantastic place. But I've really been thoroughly enjoyed and been very blessed here at Nacogdoches. They've welcomed us. We're not a Bend. We weren't born in Nac, but we got here as soon as we could. And this community has been fantastic to us and our family and this program in general.
That kind of leads me to my next question. You know, Texas is such a big state that like each region kind of has its own kind of vibe and identity. What are some of the differences between West Texas and East Texas?
Well, after I finally got over my claustrophobia, you know, because here there are trees everywhere. And, you know, where I came from, you had a tumbleweed that blow by every 2 or 3 minutes. But other than that, there were no trees and not much water. The only water you could get was what you pulled up out of the ground irrigating. And so out here, it's a different vibe. It's, you know, shoot, I look around and I think I'm in, you know, the Rocky Mountains up, you know, up in a resort town somewhere, just because from West Texas, you went to, you know, Colorado or New Mexico, you know, up in Red River, Eagle's Nest, you know, those areas and or down to Ruidoso, and you were in the mountains and these trees and pine trees. And you, unless you come out here and Nacogdoches is off the beaten path, there's not an interstate that runs through here. Unless you've specifically been out here into deep East Texas, you don't know what it's about. And it is absolutely gorgeous. The weather is phenomenal. Other than about 2 months out of the year, it gets a little hot and sticky. But right now it's, you know, Chamber of Commerce weather. And just, again, there's great people, I think, everywhere. You got to find them. I enjoy smaller communities and you know, we got about 40,000 people out here. So it's, you got all you want in a big city, but you've got still that smaller community feel. And so it's a unique place and very, very beautiful. And if you hadn't visited out in East Texas, Nacogdoches, I highly suggest you get out here and check it off your bucket list.
I asked you this when we were doing magazine preview stuff, but you know, if I could take you back to that first set of spring practices as a SFA compared to like your most recent practices at SFA, kind of how different is it just in that program over the last couple of years, just the talent level and just, you know, the ability to get guys to know what you expect, you know, each and every day?
I think it just comes, you know, we're obviously practicing a whole lot faster. You know, part of that is athleticism, you know, so part of that's people we've recruited. Part of that's, you know, our off-season program, Coach Stoner and the work that they've done just to build this program in the off seasons that we've had now. And then just, you know, knowledge of the game and familiarity with the offense, defense, special teams, and your coaching staff. And, you know, obviously we had some coaching turnover after last season. So there was, you know, a little bit of an adjustment this spring, you know, getting used to some new coaches and new terminology. But for the most part, you know, we've picked up where we left off and it's been, you know, it's night and day difference. And that's, I think back to that. I videoed our first off-season workout. I mean, and we ran like 5 over and backs and people, I mean, there was like 30 people puking everywhere. It was so, and I mean, I was just walking around, it's 5:30 in the morning and I was videoing them. I sometimes have to pull that out, to be honest with you, Mike, and watch that to know that's, you know, if I'm having a bad day or, you know, I get, you know, worried we're not doing what we need to do, you know, I don't know, get frustrated, you know, I'll pull that out and hey, that's where we started here. Where's where we are now. Let's keep pushing, take this thing to the top. But it has come a long, long ways.
If I make you NCAA king for the day, you know, what's the one thing you're changing about the current landscape of college football that you think would make it better?
NCAA king for the day, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, obviously there's a lot going on within our profession and with NIL, transfer portal, the transformation committee, all that stuff. You know, I'm all for the NIL. I think it's awesome. These kids are getting paid. I think it's long overdue, you know, using their name, image, likeness. You know, the one thing I wish, if I was king for the day, I wish I could roll back time you know, 10 or 12, 15 years, because I think the NCAA really dropped the ball, and us and as professionals have too, in terms of devaluing what an education is all about and what getting a college degree is about. And it's, we've let influencers and people that didn't go to college and didn't play college sports have such a say and just changing the landscape. And bottom line, college sports is still about getting a degree. I mean, because the ball's going to stop snapping at some point, or spinning, or shooting. They're going to ask you to stop playing. I don't care what your sport is. Unless maybe you play golf, you know, you can play golf your whole life, but at some point they're going to quit asking you to do it. And that's where these student athletes, men and women alike, you know, just having a college degree, that's going to make even the guys that go in the NFL, most of the guys that play in the NFL, if you're an average NFL player, you know, you're not going to make generational money. You still better have an education to fall back on to provide for you and your family. We've had a lot of guys coaching on our staff here that played many years in the NFL, but the only reason they're coaching here and being able to provide for their families is because they have a degree. And so I think, you know, NCAA kingmakers ought to put more emphasis on what a college education is all about and quit devaluing that and realize what we're here for is to educate, you know, men and women through the game of football or whatever sport it may be there in NCAA.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I have an uncle who played 10 years in the NFL as a quarterback. He works at Dell, right? Like, yeah. So you got to go back to work eventually, unless you're, you know, Tom Brady or something. And even Tom Brady won't retire or quit.
He's working. Already got a job after, right. after football.
Exactly. So
he may not need a degree to do that because, you know, he's the greatest of all time and he can just sit there and talk about football and get paid. But for majority of normal Americans, normal people, yeah, we need a degree to be able to provide.
You know, we talked about your hobbies a little bit. You like to hunt, you like to fish. Before we get out of here, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, where's the coolest place you've ever gone hunting? Where's the coolest place you've ever gone fishing?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I'd probably have to say Alaska. You know, it's just, I used to work a football camp up there, the All-Alaskan football camp, and fly a bunch of college coaches up there and bring all the kids from Alaska to one camp, and it was a great experience. They still do it as a Division I coach. I'm not allowed to work it anymore. Thank you, NCAA. But, you know, being able to go up there, I'd always fly my wife up and we would, you know, just hang out in that state for about 2 weeks and do some fishing and running around. And that was really, really unique and just a beautiful, magnificent place. So that'd probably be number one on it. I've not done any worldly travels. Most of my hunting is all bird hunting, you know, because I'm a football coach. So during big game season, I'm busy coaching or recruiting. And, you know, thereafter recruiting, you got a little bit of time to go do some quail hunting or pheasant hunting, but that's about it. So, but Alaska's got to be at the top of the list.
You may have already answered this question when you were talking earlier, but my last question for you is, if football didn't exist, if coaching didn't exist, you know, what would you be doing right now? What do you think your career would be without that?
I'd probably be sitting in jail, you know. I mean, prison, football coaches, and the things I learned through football, I think, really helped me. And I had good parents. I was raised right. Hopefully I wouldn't end up in prison. But, you know, football does provide such a vehicle to be successful in life. And it really, I think, served me very, very well and the coaches I played for. But in terms of just my profession, you know, I do enjoy, like I said earlier, farming and come from, you know, a long family history of farmers. And so probably be living the good life, fighting the dirt and the dust and the wind and the rain, the hail and everything. The farmers, man, they don't get enough credit, and they're what keep this country rolling. And so if you see a farmer today, Mike, give them a hug because they need it. It's a tough profession, but I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed, like I said earlier, just being outside and working with my hands and some good old manual labor is good for the soul. So I think that would be a profession that I would, you know, have probably worked towards, farming and ranching.
All right, Coach, I really appreciate the time. Interested to see what the bet's going to be this year for the Battle of Piney Woods, and good luck this summer and into the season.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for having us on. Axel.
Thanks again, to head coach Colby Carthel for sitting down with us and having a great chat. I mean, I don't know. If you're not a fan of that guy after that interview, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I really don't know what to say. Go look up the video of him taking his shirt off in the rain after they won in 2020 and fire and like in the middle of a mosh pit, like with his players. Like, those two things combined, you're like, yeah, I can play for this guy.
I had to mute myself during the interview. Of course, I was not on camera for it, but just because I was laughing so hard at him. Like, everything he said was just so funny. Yeah. I could see Craven trying to contain himself from laughing too hard because he's just a likable person. Everything he said was just so funny.
Yeah, I mean, when you know that you have a good sense of humor and you're a fun guy to be around when you're like just drilling some dude for like their job profession and he's laughing, right? You know, like, you know, when you're like, yeah, I mean, other than your job where you get to sit on the couch and just, you know,
that was good.
And so, you know, yeah, I think I'm always my whole life, I've always been one of those guys that's like the why so serious meme, right? Is football. This isn't like state secrets. We're not trying to go to the moon or anything. Like, you tackle, you block. I mean, I don't get why we have to treat this like it's some kind of like, you know, Russian spy unit or whatever. Right. What I love so much about Keeler and Carthel is that they're real about it. They work really hard. I mean, they probably put in 13, 14, 15 hours a day, just like every other coach who's successful. But they don't take, I think Carthel said it perfectly. He takes his job seriously. He doesn't take himself seriously. And we need more of that, not only in college football, but just in the world at large, because we've kind of become a society that doesn't take too much seriously, but we take ourselves way too seriously. I wish, again, as just a wrestling fan, I find the Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston game almost must watch the last 5-6 years. Because those guys make it must watch. It's entertaining. You want to see who wins. You want to see who kind of gets the last laugh, who's going to say something on Twitter to poke at the other one, what the bet's going to be. Those things are entertaining, and they bring a level of excitement to FCS football that maybe wasn't there for like the general fan, right? Like, I don't have any ties to Sam Houston or Stephen F. Austin, but that's a game I care about because the coaches have made me care about it due to their personality. I do think college football, college sports in whole, can learn a lot from those two guys and how they interact and just make that rivalry fun.
Yep. Exactly. No, I completely agree on the notion that I think when it comes to our industry, yes, obviously, you know, I do think college sports in general takes itself way too seriously. But I also, by proxy, I think our industry often takes itself way too seriously.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, it just, we're covering guys playing sports. Like, you know,
we're not sharing cancer over here.
Exactly. Like, again, we're sitting down talking on a mic about football. Like, it really is not that serious. And so, like, I'm okay with somebody cutting me down a peg because, like, I shouldn't have been that high on the pedestal anyway. Like, I really should not have been. Like, I am genuinely.
Had he said that and I would have been insulted, that's a me problem.
Right. Yes, 100%. It's like, guess what? We do sit on our butts and watch football. Like, that's what our job is. Like, I don't know. It's a privilege, obviously. And that's why we shouldn't have to take it so seriously, is because we're in a position of privilege. You know, this position, this job is, you talk to people about this job and it's like, oh, it's the coolest thing in the world, right? And like every time I talk about it, and I'm like, yeah, it's a job, you know. But they're like, oh man, this, blah 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And so, like, I have to look at it from that perspective of, like, people think this is the coolest job ever. So I can't act like I'm better than everybody, right? I can't act like I'm higher, you know. So whatever. So long story short, more Colby Carthels in the world. Yeah. I am okay joking about how we just sit on our butts and watch sports all day. So, but yeah,
and we don't know that much either, right?
Like, I was about to say, like, we're not coaches. Like,
it's happening than like the average guy who like is sitting there just watching it on TV.
We're paid to kind of guesstimate, you know, provide an educated guess as to what's happening. Oh, I don't know the play call, but this is what I think I saw. Right? This is like, it's basically the summary of our job. So yeah, I don't know. I think journalism as a profession in general takes itself way too seriously as like arbiters of truth and blah, 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 blah. So I am perfectly okay with jabbing, light jabs. As kind of their contender status and the best team in FCS now in Texas, at least now that Sam Houston's not eligible for the playoffs and Incarnate Word's in transition. So, like, where that kind of leaves them, Craven, where do you think it kind of leaves the Lumberjacks?
Yeah, it's amazing. So I had the privilege of doing the Sam Houston, Stephen F., and Incarnate Word sections in the magazine. And I feel like those are kind of the three power FCS programs right now. So it was interesting getting to talk to each three of those, you know, head coaches, because they're all in different spots. You know, Coach Kinney at Incarnate Word, he's new. This is his first year being a head coach. You know, Cameron Ward's gone, the quarterback that set all those records last year. He's at Washington State now. So they're a program that kind of is still figuring it out, kind of reset, you know, trying to see who's on campus, what kind of offense they're going to run, you know, who they can count on. There's a lot unknown there at Incarnate Word going into 2022. At Sam Houston, there's a whole lot unknown. You know, they lost over half of their starters, over half of their two deep. They're in this transition year where, yeah, they have more scholarships and the talent should be fine. But a lot of those guys haven't played together. A lot of them haven't played at FCS level. They don't have a ton to play for because they can't make the playoffs, even if they go, you know, undefeated and run through everybody. So what is it going to be at Sam Houston? And then you go to Stephen F. Austin. You look at that roster and you talk to Coach Carthel and you look at his history at previous stops and you go, this is about to jump off. Like, this is about to be the FCS program to watch in the state. Xavier Gibson at wide receiver, probably the best FCS player returning in the entire nation. Mm-hmm. Trey Self at quarterback, really, really good. Offensive line has three or four guys who have played, you know, multiple years of football. That's another example of a program that's not losing these guys, right? Xavier Gibson could have gone somewhere else. Trey Self could have gone somewhere else. A couple of those defensive guys could have gone somewhere else. But they believe in what the staff is doing. Like Coach Carthel mentioned, he believes in having some fun. That's a fun work environment, so they're staying. And I think that they're poised this year with Sam kind of being out of the window and Incarnate Word not having, you know, a star quarterback coming back, to be the team in the state to really watch to see if they can make a push, you know, against the perennial powers of FCS. And I think this is the year with the returning talent and the amount of offensive talent that he has. This is the year to really watch Stephen F. Austin in the playoffs. I think they can make some real noise and make a run similar to what Sam did in the spring of 2021.
Yeah, I agree. I think that one of the other things that I don't think can be overlooked either is that they're more or less next up when it comes to like the transition programs, right? Like, obviously they're probably going to get a good run in the FCS because they're not necessarily, you know, Nacogdoches isn't exactly the most lucrative market. And so like that's kind of what brought Incarnate Word up quicker, probably. Sam Houston has the legacy. So like that kind of brought them up. And so SFA is kind of in that next up mold of like, okay, a couple years in the dominant, you know, if they dominate the state at FCS level, and again, they're probably far and away, like as far as, you know, I don't see a close second right now with them as far as that's concerned. I don't see Houston Baptist or of course Commerce is going to be a couple years probably from being consistently competitive at that level, but they're next up in terms of being that attractive option for a Conference USA, for a Sun Belt or whatever, who looks to add another school later on, right? Because it's one thing to keep shuffling around fellow FBS schools. Eventually, you got to go and get an FCS school and try to prop them up. And if we do get to a point where, you know, they have a couple of titles under their belts, conference titles under their belt, they have one or two deep playoff runs, people are going to be looking like, okay, well, what about SFA, right? They obviously have a great basketball program, men's and women's. I think they're set up perfectly to kind of be that quick riser now that they are kind of a big fish in a small pond, to put it a certain way. Like Sam and UIW were the only other two schools in the state that really had consistently been at that level. HBU, of course, was a lot of Bailey Zappi and Zach Kittley, and they left and you saw what happened. So unless anything changes in that regard, again, this is like far and away, and the Texas market is a valuable market. So like, even though Nacogdoches might not be, the state as a whole, people just want to get in the state and people want to acquire more assets in the state. I think they have the perfect program and the perfect guy to build that too. In Colby Carthel, he's going to be a personality. You're going to know about him if they keep, if they win, you're going to see his face a lot more. You're going to hear his sound bites a lot more. And yeah, I agree. I think that this is going to be a huge, this next phase in between the realignments, whenever the next domino falls later on, this is going to be a huge showcase moment for this program, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're right at a tipping point of being a perennial program that we talk about in the state, like we do Mary Harden, like we have Sam Houston, of like, they're going to win. They're mm-hmm. going to win football games. And we've talked about it a few times on this podcast, but I am incredibly interested to see, let's say in 2 or 3 years, Stephen F. Austin is what we think that they are, right? They're going to mm-hmm. start winning conference championships. They're going to make deep runs in the playoffs. Let's say they even win a national championship, or at least get to a national championship game.
Sure.
And you're a recruit from Tyler, Texas, and you're sitting there with two offers. One of them is to play at Sam Houston. One of them is to play at Stephen F. Austin. Which program is better to play at? Mm-hmm. Is the FCS national championship contending year in, year out perennial contender team a more enticing, you know, offer for a recruit than trying to struggle to go get a bowl game, or even not even struggling, just to go to a bowl, you know, winning 8-9 games in Conference USA,
right,
moving forward? Like, which one is better? I don't know. And I honestly think that the move of Sam up to FBS, a lot of people I've seen kind of, you know, think that, oh, that may hurt Stephen F. Austin. Mm-hmm. I think it may help them. I think it, some of the guys that may have slipped to Sam are going to slip to Stephen F. now. And I think that only helps that program out in East Texas to be kind of the landing spot if FBS football just isn't for you for whatever reason, whether the coaches aren't coming or, you know, whatever that reason may be. If you're not going to be an FBS football player, now Stephen F. doesn't have to recruit against this other huge FCS power down the road. They are that FCS power. I'm just fascinated to see kind of what the talent acquisition becomes for those two programs down the road as they kind of diverge into different, you know, kind of paths over the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Yep. And for anyone that doubts kind of what we're saying about SFA being next up. So they went 8-4 last year. Their losses. Now, I'm just going to read these off. 28-22 at Texas Tech. 21-20 versus Sam Houston State. We mentioned that was one of the best games Craven saw last year. Ranked number one at the time, by the way, Sam Houston State. 4-point loss at number 24, Jacksonville State. And then an overtime loss at number 13, Incarnate Word. Those are their only losses, right? Every other win, I think they did not have a win less than double digits, right? So this is a team that was absolutely ready. And again, you have to also have to remind yourselves, this is a guy that brought in his first full year, the number one recruiting class in FCS, right? SFA was not a powerhouse by any means when he came in. They were fine, right? They've always been a respectable program, but Sam Houston was by far the more dominant program at the time. He comes in, and similarly to what we've kind of hinted at with you know, kind of going to low group of five or high FCS, he really hit that where it was like, hey, let's come build something here and potentially compete for a national title. And that's what he did, and that's what he's doing. And we arguably haven't even seen that come to fruition yet. Like, those players come to fruition yet. Or that, I think it was the 2019 class that was the top rated for FCS. So yeah, I do think they're on the verge of something really special there. And yeah, I literally cannot wait, because I just love having as deep of a football quality base as you can get in the state. And I think that they're certainly doing their part. So I wouldn't be, I don't know if they have a bye game this year? I haven't checked their 2022 schedule, so I don't know if they're going to be options to catch somebody off guard or not. Do you know, Craven?
No, off the top of my head right now.
Ooh, actually, so I'm bringing it right now. I got their schedule up right now. So I like this already. So they start off at Jacksonville State, Alcorn State, at La Tech, under a new head coach. I don't hate that. Then, of course, Lamar, Sam Houston, Incarnate Word, Southern Utah, Dixie State, Tarleton, Central Arkansas, Abilene Christian. I don't hate that La Tech game as a potential upset. Again, new coach, program still trying to kind of figure things out after the Skip Holtz thing went kind of sideways. Early in the season? I don't know. I'm not saying it's happening, but I'm going to say put a pin there. That's September 10th, Saturday, September 10th, week 3. I'm going to be paying attention to that game.
I hate to bring this up, but that reminds me a lot of like the Incarnate Word Texas State game of last year, where I'm imagining if you're there and watching pregame warmups, if they switch jerseys, you wouldn't call BS, right?
Why are you bringing up old stuff?
I don't know if you'll be able to tell which one's the FBS team and which one's the FCS team. I think Stephen F. is as talented, if not more talented, than La Tech. They're absolutely going to have the best player on the field. Sure. Xavier Gibson's more talented than anybody that La Tech has. So that's a game that, you know, honestly, Stephen F. wins that one. I know it'll be an upset to gamblers and stuff like that. I bet you anything Colby Carthel wouldn't consider it an upset. That speaks to where he's gotten that SFA program and that they're right on the cusp of doing something seriously, seriously big inside the state. And for people still listening, you know, we talk a lot about like how there's more to football than just Power Five in the college football playoffs. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot more to college football than just the FBS level. Like FCS football, Division II football, it's great, right? Like if you like high school football, you'd love this, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's the talent level's there. The best teams that, you know, sure there are some FCS teams that are bad, but like really good FCS competition, like Incarnate Word versus Stephen F. That Sam Houston versus Stephen F. game last year in NRG was up there with any of the other FBS games I went to last year in terms of just overall enjoyment level. So I encourage everybody, you know, to kind of mix in a couple of FCS games. And I think that was one of the cool things about that COVID spring year is it introduced some people to a different brand of football that maybe they weren't ever, you know, experienced in. And you look at it and you go, oh, well, this is quality football. This is entertaining, good football. And just the fact that we live in a state where there's 47 programs to cover and there's so many different storylines and so many different teams competing for stuff, I think it really just speaks to the quality of the sport within this state.
Yep, I agree. So that'll do it for us this week. Craven, do we have a hint for the next guy you're trying to line up?
They won an overtime game against Stephen F. last year.
There you go. There you go. So,
he was the quarterback Ilmer High School with Jeff Traylor as the head coach. Maybe that's a better.
He's often seen as another guy who got away when it comes to Mack Brown's final tenure at Texas. So he was one of the probably not as high profile of as some of the other guys who got away, but definitely somebody who I think probably should have been wearing burnt orange compared to the guys they were running out at the time. There's your hint. It's pretty obvious if you're familiar with anything football in the state. So hopefully, or just listen to this podcast a couple minutes ago. anyway, that'll be our next guest. And we look forward to that. For Mike and Mallory, I'm Ishmael Johnson. Thank you guys for listening. Remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff helps us out a lot. We see the numbers. We review them every week in our meetings, and it's always nice to have a good number. We want to beat Texas football today, so we have a ways to go. But I think we can do it because there are some passionate college football fans in this state. So please help us beat Pickle and Tepper in their podcast. With that being said, we will talk to you guys next week.